Blog Talk Radio.
January 2017. That means there's only what? Oh, gee, 364 days left. I'm starting the morning off a little slower than usual. I did stay up to extend holiday greetings to some friends. I want to welcome you all back and tell you just how grateful I am for the support that you've shown over the years. This is the start of our eighth year at Masonic Effects, and for the thousands, excuse me, now this is a right well-organized show today. This is the day of time of celebration and a time of tradition. And here I am coughing and wheezing. Maybe that's just part of the tradition. We're gonna have to talk about resolutions, gentlemen. Yeah, I know. You know, little fun facts here. It's for all Masons everywhere. Oh, approximately 6 million of us. That's always an approximation. It's the first day of the modern Gregorian calendar, as well as the Julian calendar. Who knew? In pre-Christian Rome, under the Julian calendar, the day was dedicated to Janus, the god of gateways and beginnings. So it's very fitting, isn't it? For whom January is named. Very, very fitting. As late as the Gregorian calendar of Christendom, as a date, the New Year's Day liturgically marked the feast of the naming and circumcision of Jesus, which is still observed as such in the Anglican Church and Lutheran Church. Yes. In present day, with most communities, most countries now using the Gregorian calendar, New Year's Day is probably the most celebrated public holiday, and we should do it right. We should do it right. Hear. And in this young country, it's a special day. This is a reach out to our listeners from Australia and the United States and Norway and the support across this country. This is a celebration of our 150th birthday. We are infants in the big scale of things. When China was 150 years old, they were not doing as well as us. When the U.S. was 150, when Britain was 150 years into their history, they were at war, pitch battles, social complications. All right, so you're going to say different times. Well, cut us a little bit of slack, too. Look at what we have. Look at all that we have. A huge space. We need people here. Oh, my goodness, we do. But our leaders don't just move people around like commodities. We search for Canadians, people who want to be Canadian so they'll thrive and have opportunity and shoulder the responsibility of being part of this wonderful nation. A few months ago, people started to talk about how much it was Barack Obama when he came to power. The world needs more Canada. Well, absolutely. Our values are resilient. And you, here in this country, and I'm pretty sure that listeners from other countries out there will feel that the pride of their nation and their Masonic values are being shared. We didn't invent pride. We didn't invent diligence. Well, think of the other nations around the world, other Masons around the world. Each has had his or their own struggle and prevailed, somehow prevailed. They've also had a belief. Now, one day we will have more symmetry in terms of a culture. One day, that's inevitable, because when people come from somewhere away, they cling to away. And how many generations does it take for away to fade? Well, it tends not to fade. We get busy with the day-to-day, the workings of life here in Canada, which is fun. You know, it's challenging. And creates a tension, a dynamic tension. But when you see it working, it's like things aren't running on, we're not a military state, thank goodness. But things run approximately on time. And we are approximately happy. And in this country, we are okay waiting for our turn. Oh, now there's a chess move if I've ever heard it. So many other countries are pounding their little fists on the little tables, demanding that the world pay attention to them for being, what, top or first in their own minds, of course. Well, we're never going to rid ourselves of that kind of, you know, hangers-on. People that don't really create that high moral courage, they don't do that. But they prey on it. They feed on it. That's all they're doing, and it's okay. They can get quite fat and bloated, living off the goodwill that was created by other people. Now, apart from the finger pointing, that's inevitable. Somebody lets their puppy poop on your front lawn. They're not your favorite person that day, but we get over that. And it's true. Time helps us to heal. Time is our best ingredient in this country. The future is looking good, not just because it's said that way, but because it's valid. We have space. We have natural resources. We have talent. And we're learning as we go along. We're learning from our mistakes. And we have some remarkably intelligent people in this country. Just look at what's going on in the areas of pharmacological medicine and neurosurgeries. There's some talent there. Our crop science is second to none in the world. And we are not a bunch of silly old farmers or very polite fools. We're people that are astute. And we respect when it's time to hold our cards close to our breast. I'm just enjoying my second cup of coffee for this morning. So here's to all of you out there. This is a completely semi-undulterated coffee, and I'm saluting all of you. So, but later when there's a nice tune on, I'll be upstanding and I'll toast you in fine order. But right now, we've got I'm going to want to take the program into a much more expansive frame of thinking in the for the future of Masonic effects. I think it's time to that we moved on, that we finally endorse what's been happening around us, and they start to make some acknowledgments. Now, we're a complicated breed, we bunch. Now, in the program, I think that's coming up maybe 2 weeks from now, 2 or 3 weeks from now, we're going to be talking about how that's occurred, but we'll have a little bit of a taste of that today, how our stance as historians, our perspective, it makes it difficult for us because we are writing about gentlemen that are our brethren. And unlike the rest of the world, unlike the academics that can mock us and do research with apparent impunity based on the startling coldness of fact, we care. We care about the reputation of the people that we're working with and that have went on to influence Masonry in the past. One of the things that's very difficult, at this time of year we can be, I think, incredibly generous, is that we can't give it much. We have a very difficult time threading the path of critical feedback. So if we look at the body of work, which history will do, like we can look at the 18th century, and we can look at two things. We can look at the people that are being quoted, and then we can look at the ethos, the overall life of Masonry, and ask ourselves very simple questions. Did it progress? Well, I think what we've been doing in the last generations are very similar to what was going on in much of the history of Masonry. We know about the builders and we understand the metaphor, and we are in so many areas of our private life quite capable craftsmen. When it comes to Masonry, we're more obliged to housekeeping than we are to building the temples and the cathedrals. And some of our houses are in impeccable condition. Some of them aren't. Some of them need a massive overhaul. Some of them aren't worth overhauling. Those shrinking numbers, we've talked about that before. Masonry is more than a membership list, far more. We have obligations to that, to our participation as a member of a lodge, but that obligation isn't designed or appropriated by a central authority. Our participation comes from within, our willingness to be there. Our willingness is something that's given. It's like a right of way. Right of way is never taken, it's given. So in the generosity, we can be very generous to the fellows in the 17th and 18th century because they were us. And they've passed the baton on through time. And we have and suffered the same types of barbs and arrows. Personality clashes, you know, then that's where we get because we are at the end of the day a group of men, and we do have tendencies when you put that kind of chemistry together to act ridiculous, and so we're true to form. But we also have a core that emerges over time, And this is the perspective of people that are watchers. The unpolished stone becomes a gentleman. He's thoughtful. He thinks before he speaks. He's reasonable around his brethren, and when challenged, will take the path of support for the brethren. It puts him in a dilemma, though. What does he do? How do we correct? If we said, you know, the last, let's say something arbitrary, the last 15 grandmasters in our particular Grand Lodge were housekeepers, and they really didn't add. Well, okay, that's a legitimate statement to make, but what does it mean? What the hell does that mean? What is it that is this? What is it that we're adding? And how? Let's get right down to it. We've got something really complicated, but the history, it's not, our history isn't an examination of events and processes. It's an examination of us while this is all unfolding around us. If you want proof of this, listen to a historian talk about Freemasonry. Oh, it's bound to wake up some wag who'll say something silly in the crowd. But pay attention and focus on the attitude of the academic to the work. It tends to be a bit impersonal. One of the blessings that we have about being brethren is that we have a personal connection. Now, I'm not talking about some lugubrious nonsense. I'm talking about an intimacy that is intellectual. We know and we understand. All of our cultural differences still stand quite well and should. Let's not be so soft-minded that we're going to be expecting everybody that there's going to be some kind of intellectual entropy within the ranks of Masons, where everybody's just going to be lacking any kind of leadership, except those that have been convinced that they should follow and others should lead. Yeah. But another day we'll come back and talk about that. We're going to talk great commentary today. Chasing imagination. Has Masonry rediscovered its taste for ideas? Over the past couple of months, we've been talking more and more about the cultivation of imagination. I picked up some material by Albert Einstein. He was talking about how the importance of imagination, far more important for him than knowledge. Well, if you're so ridiculous to stand up and say, well, there I knew. All that self-discipline that I was being taught in the classroom was completely wrong, and here's Einstein Einstein saying it, and he's bright, so it must be true. School is stupid, and I was right. Grow up. He's simply saying that knowledge isn't enough. But you can acquire tremendous amounts of knowledge. But what we also need is inspiration. We need people that are inspired, that take the ideas and see things in the merging of those ideas that other people don't. We can do this within our minds, mind palaces of the days of old, where people were trained to use mnemonics to do quite remarkable feats of recitation. You know, reciting the entire Bible and things like that, and parlor tricks. And all those things are still available today. But our tendency today, comparatively, we seem lazy, which is ridiculous. Oh, every so often a politician will get up and talk about how we need to be more productive. Well, that's been done over and over. I'll get the reference for you. The wag that said, oh, the world will become overpopulated. You know, we need to fear that. Well, we're calculating now that we'll have a population, I think about 2050, we'll have about somewhere between 10 and 11 billion people. Right now, we're hovering a little over 7. There are some natural processes, even things that all of our Sunday school teachers can't change. There's limits to growth. Limits to growth. And don't be thinking of us as a travesty, unworthy of what we have. We're as worthy of life and happiness as any other creature that was ever put on this earth. Our respect for our Mother Earth and the world around us and the people in it is starting to go beyond differences in religion and differences in militarism. The whole idea of imperialism and colonialism has been ground to a halt. And we're seeing skirmishes still, particularly on the emerging continent, Africa. It's emerging. But now we're able to examine these things at arm's length. It takes us a while. It takes us years to pull this train around, pull the ship around. The inertia that we have is tremendous. And when we want to do something collectively for the common good, if there was ever a central Masonic value, it takes a while. Oh, you want to think that you can just jump off your roller skates and stop on a dime? Not so much. So point your fingers and wag away, children. Like children, that nobody's doing anything and nobody cares and the world is a great big place. Well, aude bide tache. Be the one that follows the path less trodden. Whether you're up in the high northern regions of the world or in the southern tips, our grasp, our grip is firm. So let's take a little bit of a break. You're tired of hearing me. Here where I am in this part of the world, I'm looking at a beautiful, white, snowy day. The trees are covered with snow. The driveway's been shoveled. It's that quietness outside, that biting cold. It's a bit damp. I'll put on a fire in a minute or so. But first, we're going to listen to a little bit of music that I think sets up the whole atmosphere for this incredible day. And this is the only day that I take out the book of poetry that was passed on from my grandfather to me, from Right Worshipful Brother, from Very Worshipful Brother Cyril Toombs. And it's the poems of Robbie Burns. And my personal sense, my intimate sense of my grandfather is because of the well-thumbed certain poems, the very, very lovely poems that are well-thumbed with Prince Edward Island redness around the edges. This is, I'm going to play a piece of music here. I think it's just a charming little piece. And sit back or rush around fiendishly. This is the Lakme duet. You've all probably heard of it, I hope. And this one is sung, this performance duet is with Renee Fleming, lovely, and Susan Graham. Yes, I'm unabashedly promoting a Graham here, and the Montrose Gable Endies for their enormous efforts in the 20s up to in the Tier 2 Scottish Football League. Here. Sit back and relax and enjoy this.
Me
That's just incredible. Just incredible. We're so fortunate to be able to have all this technology where we can bring back material like that and sit and listen to it over and over again. Sort of a dreamlike quality to that music. Anyway, let me share with you the commentary for today. And I listened to... And I want to share with you a little bit of Henrik Ibsen, just a little bit. A great mind, a remarkable person. Somebody might be able to tell me if he was amazing. I don't know. It's not like we have a claim to a brain drain or anything like that. But sometimes he was an interesting fellow, and some of his thoughts I think will reveal the kind of beautiful thinker that he was. He said like this: the spirit of truth and the spirit of freedom, these are the pillars of society. A minority may be right, and a majority is always wrong. A community is like a ship. Everyone ought to be prepared to take the helm. Oh, around the coffee shops in my neighborhood, they are. If I want to know how to run the country, or how to correct the economic problems, or what to do with the running of government, I go to the coffee shop. I don't go to the universities, and I don't go to the offices of the banks and major corporations. I go to the coffee shop because everybody there speaks without hesitancy, and they're all affirmed in their own bliss. They're all experts in their field. Do you know what we are, those of us who count as pillars of society? Do you know what we are? He says, we are society's tools. Nothing neither more nor less. I think that's noble enough for the likes of me. Certainly, I'm a tool for society. Pillar of society, I like to think of, but that's a little bit lofty for the likes of me. He said, it is incredibly touching. The strongest man in the world is he who stands most alone. Hendrik Ibsen. Yeah. What's not to like? I'll pass on. You know, this is, he's intoxicated. It's just one of those little flavors you just want to. I'm afraid for all those who will have the bread snatched from their mouths by these machines. What business has science and capitalism got bringing all these new inventions into the works before society has produced a generation educated up to using them? He's right. The damage of industrialism, the damage of change. We're asked continuously to compromise for the sake of moving ahead. But we don't look face to face at the hunger that this creates and the suffering it creates. It's harder for us when we're focused on greed and taking care of our own. But what he says is true. What he says is true. Now, about our imaginations, a careful reading of Masonic history lets us know that we were of great imaginations, a cluster of imagination, and it was imagination that I think brought the thinkers and movers and shakers together. Whether they were a merchant, you know, that low, up-and-coming but not born to gentry bunch, or gentry, the sort of inbred bunch that were struggling with their own mediocrity and indifferent to suffering created in order for them to enjoy so-called luxury. The scientists that were getting away with doing things under the table, they were doing things in secret because they didn't want to upset the status quo and get themselves thrown into prison. Theologians that took a careful look at what they were professing, they were well educated. They were part of the people. They were part of a small group of people outside of the gentry who had access to the most recent written material and to the current thought. And some of them dithered and pissed it away, of course, gentlemen. But the sense that these were men of idea, I think is significant. And oh my, somebody was writing about how the growth of Freemasonry followed the growth of the British Empire, growth of colonialism. I tend to think it was like, when a bomb goes off in a field or there's an explosion in a field or an earthquake, it changes the composition of the soil and light and things begin to grow. It's like what happens after a forest fire. When you go back a couple of years afterwards, you can still smell the charcoal, of course. And all of a sudden, the charcoal is clearing the water, anything that's filtered through. It's just a great, big, huge, unnecessary charcoal filter. But we see growth. We see plants. We see the seeds that were in the soil begin to surface. At least in this part of the world, we do. So we're quite fortunate that there is always a change going on. And so whatever you and I are deciding in our minds is permanent only in our minds. Every rock, every piece of marble, every piece of concrete, every piece of steel is exposed to forces that change it. Here we go. Being aware is a process of becoming. That's you. With that in mind, I want to explore what I think is a sensible connection the Holy Grail, if you will, that reveals our past, our present, and the future of Masonry. What is imagination? If we ride our thinking of the metaphor, devaluing allegory and living in a geometric emotional state, then we can understand how Masonry has been suffocating under its own weight since the 19th century. Masons are challenged to disinfect our lives of superstition with the light of knowledge. Being rational does not reduce imagination. Though a person lives as an atheist, atheism does not rid mankind of faith. Some admire the sense of struggle. Professor Dawkins brings to our world awareness, the import, the schooling, it pushes the smugness out of the way. The genetic code of Masonry has mutated at various points, but it remains deterministic. Without imagination, the Masonic culture collapses. Entry into the ethos of Masonry, what was required of those men of the Royal Society, philosophers, alchemists, theologians, royal merchant banker, the requirement was imagination, going beyond what is to the dream state of what could be, going beyond what is the dream state. Their appetites were so keen, the fuel of imagination, if you will, our tastes, were written down as a course of study, arts and sciences. It was our taste, we were there. In a way, we were there at the start because we are men of imagination and creativity and knowledge. In various forms. The only thing that tends to be a barrier is our own meagerness. Meagerness of spirit, or underestimating our capacity for foolishness, for experimentation, for discovery. Cuneiform is the earliest form of writing. Even though the epic poem Gilgamesh was written in cuneiform, the first use was by bookkeepers, records of taxation. Cuneiform scholarship reveals the story of Gilgamesh was part of the borrowing of Judaism and Christianity. These major feasts bore brilliant ideas. The great moral story of the flood story, the paradigm of God's judgment with a promise of forgiveness, is of human imagination. It is the best part of consciousness, what makes us what we are. For many generations, Masons have been busy bookkeepers, telling us that doing good deeds makes one a better person. But for all the years of translation, the stable foundation of the gentle craft has always been imagination. Perhaps it's time for us to feast again. Join me.
Living for
Oh. It goes on. We are an influence, you know. We are. It's just as any one individual is an influence, only we have to think that we are 6 million of us. If we start to talk about that, there's always been this sort of implied fretting that somehow, somewhere, a person of influence who claims to speak for the people rather than for himself will feel that this is an uncontrolled masonry, is something that needs to be controlled, and that its activities are nefarious and malevolent somehow, obviously, because he or she doesn't know very much about the order. And for us, it's wrong-minded to smugly sit back and smile to ourselves and think that how wrong they could be. We can reach out and do a much better job than what we have been doing. We're talking about people who are worried about us. Of all the things that people have to deal with in the course of the day, there's a great sadness when I think that people are worried about us, about Masons. A group that is not benign, but is striving, we're not just invisible, our efforts are to try and make things better. Well, when we say that, boy, that gets us into a whole, throws us into quite a kettle. There's been a lot of effort, a lot of wrongness made under that statement. Just trying to do the right thing. What makes it difficult for people, I think, is that they worry about a group that doesn't have apparent checks and balances. We've been very shy about this, gentlemen. We've been shy about exposing the checks and balances to the world. I know that each one of you feels a tremendous commitment to his values, to the obligations, to the principles that he swore an oath to preserve. And in the third, we swear oaths to support one another, no matter what. You want a really good learning? Your Masonic education is incomplete until you've been part of a Masonic group where you're treated like a stranger. And then all of a sudden, the people of character will stand out so obviously. They'll stand out to you, and the rest will be like the agora. They'll go about their business, patting each other on the back, claiming the rightness of their judgments. And we're a little more sophisticated, but we still function like the ancient Greeks. When they started to describe democracy, they had us right. Why is it that politics and isn't something that we talk about? It's because we have more important things to decide on, more important things to do that will help develop the character. Part of that is doing good deeds. Who's the judge of that? Us? Only if we get ridiculous. Why would people ever worry? Well, some people are worrisome, you could say. That's true. Some people may have had a bad experience with somebody that was a Mason, and that happens. We know that, shamefully. But for those who are worried for no other reason than the structure and circumstance of Masonry, there's much that we can do. Today, 2017, we need to be able to answer to the question of Masonry and misogyny. Is this an all-male bastion that is carved out of material that is misogynistic. No, it isn't. Nope. That would be simplistic. That would mean that it would appeal to a certain type of unimaginative creature. That would be utterly, ridiculously boring. Are we all articulate and sophisticated enough in our thinking to be able to describe and talk about this in an enlightened way that makes it sound, doesn't make it sound like fools? Well, no. Much of this conversation depends on the woman or women that we're speaking with at the time. Should they be afraid? I would only say this. Masonry isn't an attack dog. It's more like something reliable that's always been there. It's about faith and a belief that working together makes the world a better place. And it's a recognition, not against any woman, not ever. That would be foolish of us. But it's an admission that when we're together in groups of men, there's a chemistry. It's odd, it's different, but it's there. Undeniable, undeniable. So we go about trying to set people's minds at ease with the deed and let them judge the merit of the deed. And some may never see it. They always may feel that our good deeds are done to gain some favor or leverage. In other words, it's currency. It's not done for its own sake. Who could fault people for doing that in this day and age? For being cynical? Come on. We can be more generous. But it means we need to always be very thoughtful, even when we're admitting mistakes and our shortcomings, and even when some of the questions are so difficult we don't have quick answers. It's you that people remember, not me, not tuning into this show for the past, 7 years now. It's you. You're the experience. You're the epitome of masonry in the lives and minds of, 7 billion people in the face of the earth? We're only, at the very robust 6 million globally, all in. Well, I like to think that of the 6 million, the majority, all of us are in some way gentlemen acting with kindness. Hey, here's a little something Canadian. But I want to set this up with a little bit of a note about from Ibsen again. Say, castles in the air, that's us, isn't it? They are so easy to take refuge in and so easy to build to. What's he getting at? Something about the imagination. He says, don't use that foreign word, ideals. We have that excellent native word, lies. Oh, Hendrik. You just, this is a man you want to sit down and listen, have a conversation. Your home, he says, is regarded as a model home. Your life as a model life. But all this splendor and you along with it, it's just as though it were built upon a shifting quagmire. A moment may come, a word can be spoken, and both you and all this splendor will collapse. Who's there with these, with our brethren who are in that state of collapse? Everything going along fine one day and the next not. What do we do with this character? Write it off? Obviously, that's the tendency. Just write it off. Ignore the human being. If ever we needed something by Ralph Waldo Emerson or T.S. Eliot or Goethe or Poe or Gilbran, here, something more uplifting and achievable. This is Sarah McLachlan's Song for a Winter's Night. I think you'll like it. Yeah, no question. Yeah, Australia, join us in a winter's night here. Yeah. Something from Canada for the rest of the world. Somewhere the planets will make sure, the universe will make sure that we're in winter. So that's something to keep you warm and keep a good thought. I think one of the greatest pleasures and one of the greatest riches that a Mason can experience is the solace of his own mind, to be able to study, to read, to develop. Goodness gracious, we're all going to have aches and pains, and there's enough to complain about that you can have at it all the time, but you're going to seriously bore the pants off yourself there, my friend. And you're going to bore everybody within earshot You knew better than that. The world's your oyster. Go out and explore. You don't have to have the. You need a bloody laboratory, do you? Well, fine. What are you doing with Darwin? He just ran around and jumped on a boat and walked around on shores and looked at nature. And somewhere along the line, some of our poets, Wordsworth, for example, taught us about the respect for nature, the truth that was in nature. And we mocked that. Boy, did we ever mock that kind of notion. It's too difficult to sort out, too difficult to understand. But we'll get there here. Before we do, we're going to have to wrap this show up somehow. This is, believe it or not, the first song my little girl ever sang. And she had been taught this by her mother. I was giving her a bath one evening. She would be, somewhere around 2 or 3 years old. And she cranked out this tune. And you can imagine... You can imagine my response, and you'll know exactly when you hear this why I'm playing it today. She's now a 26-year-old, a wonderful young woman, bright and cheerful, and she's hard on her old man, just like she's supposed to be. But when she sang this, this is a defining moment for a father. Check this out. Yeah.
Spreading the news, I'm leaving today. I want to be part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart. New York, New York, I
There you go. So says the reading for Robbie Burns for New Year's. This is the lament, a mother's lament. It's written about the premature death of James Ferguson, Esquire. Fate gave the word. The arrow sped and pierced my darling's heart. And with him all the joys are fled. Life can to me impart. Cruel hands the sapling drops. In dust dishonored laid. So fell the pride of all my hopes, my age's future shade. The mother linnet in the brake bewails her ravished young. So I, for my lost darling's sake, lament the live day long. Death, often I've feared thy fatal blow. Now, fond I, bear my breast. Oh, do thou kindly lay me low with him I love at rest. This is the... He wrote a poem about the feelings of a mom toward her son who had passed away. How important. And she was ready to die. Life could not go on because her darling child was dead. Here's to you, Robbie Burns. And this is a day when we can, you can remind all of us that there's everybody on some day of the year is a bit Scottish, proud heritage. And as my wonderful friend Robert would often say, it's a great place to come from. And you know, back there, it's absolutely a great place to come from. So I'll put that away. That book is now, this is printed in 1900. Holy crap, that's getting on there. It's getting a little more fragile. It's almost as fragile as I am. Well, I've got to wrap this up. Unfortunately, I have to wrap up the program. I don't want to stop the program today. I want to continue the conversation with you. I want to talk to you about imagination and drive and focus and purpose and accomplishment. And I want to talk to you about the undertaking, what you've been able to achieve. It's one absolutely wonderful. You, I, we have been able to achieve. So this year, as part of your New Year's resolution, oh, you thought I would forget. We have to have resolutions. It's a tradition. It's more common over in the Western Hemisphere, but it's a good idea. It's a night watch. At night watch services, many Christians prepare for the year ahead by praying and making these resolutions. In the medieval era, the knights took the peacock vow at the end of the Christmas season each year to reaffirm their commitment to chivalry. Peacock vow. The Romans, even before then, began each year by making promises to the god Janus, for whom the month of January is named. So, for you, make a promise to yourself. That's a resolution. Be more tolerant of yourself. Be more generous. Increase your expectations of yourself. It's okay. Nobody else is going to know that you're working away at something that's important to you. Nobody else is going to know, and frankly, nobody else is going to care. You don't. And does a mason owe that to himself? Well, if you've got to be told the answer to that, I don't have much more to say. We don't have much more to talk about. Of course you do. So slow down just enough to listen. Here's some interesting, you know, the interesting things. Stop biting your fingernails, get rid of old habits, quit smoking, drink less alcohol, exercise more. All of this stuff, why don't you just bracket? You're going to take better care of yourself and the people around you. That's a nice way. Self-improvement, you want to reduce your stress. You'll live longer. Your brain will like you for it. Trust me on that one. Your brain chemistry is going to be influenced, and that's a good thing. Don't stop doing what you're doing because the alternatives are really bleak. As we get older and older, it's easier to stop and easier to complain. And we, especially when it takes so much energy, it takes double and treble the energy to do the simple things that we used to take for granted. And we can look at, I look at young people jumping out of their vehicles and zipping around, and I think, if I could only do that. Well, so that's my goal, to be able to do things casually and comfortably. So this year, develop your taste in music. Push yourself outside your comfort zone sometimes. Listen to some tunes that may not be exactly your bellywick right now. But whatever you do, don't listen to the trash and garbage. Listen to a good version of whatever music that you care about. Or if it's trying to understand what the hell poetry is about, well, go and study it. Go and study it. You can go to your local library today. And finally, join me in a prayer to reach out to all of the people around the world that are being persecuted. Whatever adventure they're in, they don't deserve that. Nobody does. And for all the misguided anger that's out there, join me in apologizing. We've missed track. You feel so protective of your family that when they're blown up, you're angry at the country that sent the bombs. I absolutely get that. It's the human tragedy. And you shouldn't forgive while you're still burying your children. Don't be ridiculous. But it's not the man that you hate. And I'm not giving you that song and dance about it's guns that kill. It's not guns that kill, it's people. Guns kill. You're trained to kill people. That's what they do. They kill things. No, I'm not so maudlin and weak-willed anymore. You know, all that effort, violence, to try and solve problems, it never works. And the wounds, with time, will heal, but you need to get out of the war zones. So for the exodus that's going on around the world and all the people that are displaced, the diaspora, wherever you have to go to find a shelter, you're no doubt going to come to a place where masonry is strong. And that's the point. You live with us, you live safe. And we're in the background where we should be, trying to help, being generous. This is the country where when you're getting out of a busy parking lot onto a busy street, you'll see a Canadian flick their lights and stop and give you that gap. Or when there's a cruiser over the hill with his little beam going to give you a ticket, you'll see the headlights just flicker a little bit. Just a little out there. Thank you very much. Or if it's in a dark and stormy night and you're broken down at the side of the road, you see this pickup with two or three fellows pour out of it, likely to give you a hand. That's Canada for you. We have a wonderful sense of humor. Like to work hard. Like to treat people fairly. We're long on tolerance. But boy, when we don't like you, we don't like you forever. So, and some politicians are paying that price because they've just been giving the finger to the boys and girls here in this country a little too often. Things are changing for the better, 2017. It's been an absolute pleasure being with you. Here, we'll go. We'll go now. Go away, Dale. Susan Boyle. Had to do it, gentlemen. Had to. Thank you.